This is the first of what will be a two-part series, I think, on sort of general parameters of the mitzvah of Hashavat Avedah and the status of an Avedah. And just to clarify terminology, an Avedah literally means a lost item. We have been dealing with it already for a number of sugyot in the first parak, and the whole second parak will be devoted to it. Matter of fact, it's called Elu Mitzvot. And then we're going to leave it behind. So I would like to, sort of in anticipation of the second parak, to take a look at the general panorama of what the mitzvah of Hashavat Avedah and mitzvot that may be related to it. I'm going to pose a conceptual question to start the shiur. Is the obligation to return a lost item an independent mitzvah which sits with its own parameters and its own sort of world of halachic details? Is it a mitzvah that is related in some way to gezeilah, in that it's something that has come to my hands somewhat illicitly? And now it's not fully illicitly because the fellow dropped it and I picked it up. But is the choice that I have of what to do once I've picked it up or once I've spotted it, does that fall under the rubric in some sense of the prohibition of gneva or gezeilah? And on the other hand, which now means we have three hands here, is it possible that the mitzvah of Hashavat Avedah is part of a larger group of mitzvot in which I am obligated to look after the property of my fellow? And if so, what's the nature of that group? So we're asking the larger questions now. The questions will become more defined during the shiur and in the second part, even more defined. And then when we move on, we'll take a look at some specific cases of Hashavat Avedah, but that will be in the third shiur in the parak. So let's start with the beginning, because that's, to quote Julie Andrews, a very good place to start. We are taking a look at a passage near the beginning of Parshat Ki Tetzeh. Parenthetically, Parshat Ki Tetzeh is the most intense parsha when it comes to mitzvot, and along with Kedoshim, which we're going to look at, and Mishpatim, which we're going to look at, are the three parashot that contain the most intense amount of legal code. And again, towards the beginning of chapter 22, Lo tir'e et shor achicha o et tzeyon nidachim. Now, a little translation would mean, you shall not see the ox of your fellow or his lamb wandering and ignore them, turn your eyes away from them. So clearly, there can't be a prohibition of looking, lo tireh. So lo tireh is connected to v'italamtam, and the prohibition is not to see. The prohibition is, once you see, to ignore, which means there's a notice that the mitzvah of Hashavat Avedah is initiated not with an obligation, but with a prohibition, which itself is unusual, which is that when you see an animal of your fellow that is wandering around, presumably lost, then you may not turn away and ignore it. Hashev teshivein leachicha. Indeed, return them to your brother, right? To your fellow. All right, so now we have a lo taseh and an aseh, and we would think about, before going further, we would think about this pairing as a classic example of a lav anitak laaseh. We've spoken about this more recently, about mitzvot lo taseh, for which you don't get makot because the Torah puts in a fix. Like, you don't get makot for hitting somebody because you have to pay all sorts of payments. That's the lav anitam l'tashlumin. You don't get makot for leaving a korban over past its time because you are obligated to then burn it up. There is a fix the Torah puts in rather than a punishment. So you would look at this and it sounds like it's a lav anitak laaseh. Don't turn away, rather return them. But it's not a lav anitak laaseh. It's not saying, if you turn away and you blew it, now here's what you do, fix it. It's, don't turn away, rather, here's what you got to do, return it. And then we get details. Meaning, if your brother is not near you, nor do you know who he is, or perhaps, or you don't know where he is, or who he is. Meaning, you know whose it is, but he's not nearby, so you can't go get him, or you don't know who it belongs to. Va'asafto el toch betecha, bring this animal into your house. Va'ya'imcha ador shachicha oto, it stays with you until your brother seeks it out. Which means, by the way, who's the obligation on when it comes to retrieving an avedah? Not on the motzei avedah, the one who found it, but rather on the ba'alim, the owner who lost it. Va'shevoto lo, and then you return it to him. Now, return it to him sounds like at no point do you have to go searching. In other words, you bring it into you give it to him. If you don't know who he is or he's not nearby, you bring it into your house and wait for him to come and seek it out. And then you return it to him on the spot. Now, at this point, we're only talking about animals wandering around. That's it. But now that the text expands, V'chein tasela chamoro, so not only his ox and his lamb, but also his donkey. Now, if I stop there, I might think that this only applies to animals, which, by the way, is a real understandable sort of scenario of animals wandering off on their own, as opposed to inanimate objects that don't get up and walk out on their own. V'chein tasel l'simlato. A simla is a dress or a garment, a tunic. In other words, an item of clothing. And now we've expanded the field to things which don't wander on their own. V'chein tasel l'chol avedat achicha shetovad mimenu umetzata. And you do this for anything that your brother has lost, that is lost from him, and you find it. Lo tuchal lehitalem. Now notice, at the end of the paragraph, we go back to the beginning of the paragraph. The beginning of the paragraph is, do not see it and turn away and ignore it. And then at the very end is, this is what you must do for any item lost from your friend that is lost from it and you find it, you may not ignore it. So the prohibition of ignoring kind of envelopes this entire thing of lo tuchal lehitalem. Now, of course, lo tuchal lehitalem is the sort of thing it's unenforceable. Imagine how this would play out. Somebody accuses you of seeing somebody else's lost ox and not acting on it. So you have very easy outs. I didn't see it. I didn't recognize it. I was looking the other way. Lo tuchal lehitalem is something which is definitely in the chambers of your heart. Only you know about that. Now, the very next parasha in Ki Teitzeh, which you see there's a, I didn't want to put a samach in there, but there's a parasha stumah. Does everybody see I left a space before the dollar there? Because in a Sefer Torah, there'll be a short space. It's a parasha stumah. And that is lo tireh, this should sound familiar. Lo tireh, et chamor achicha osharon noflim baderech. You do not see the donkey of your fellow or his ox falling on the road, v'hit alamta mehem, and ignore them. Now that sounds pretty parallel, doesn't it? It starts with lo tirah, don't see a certain thing, and turn away. Meaning if you see this, you're obligated to act, you're not allowed to ignore. And what is it you're seeing here? Hakem takim imo, raise the animal up with him. Who's him? The owner. Which means we have a very different scenario here. You're watching your fellow load his donkey. The donkey is not, you know, he's having a difficult time loading the donkey. You're not allowed to watch him suffering like that. You're supposed to go and help him load the donkey or load the ox. Now, by the way, here there is no extension to clothing, etc. There's only with pack animals. But the language of lo tireh, just like we had in Pasuk Aleph, and v'italamta mehem at the end of that Pasuk, just like near the end of Pasuk Aleph, seems to can echo. And the very fact that these two things are next to each other, the obligation to return a lost item and the obligation to help somebody who's trying to pack up his animal, seem to be speaking to each other. And the Sifri picks up on this on the spot. The Sifri here, chen tasel chamoro. All right, so now the Sifri gives us some details. Because if you think about it, there's an inherent problem in the obligation. We'll talk in a minute about the juxtaposition of these two things. But there's an inherent problem in the obligation in Pasuk Bet. which is that if you don't know who the guy is or he's not nearby, you bring it into the house and it's there until he seeks it out from you. Well, bringing a garment into the house and putting it safely in your closet is fine. Bringing an ox into your, we'll say, into your property is not so simple, right? So take a look at the Sifrei. Hayta chamor osa, we're going to see a lot of this in the second parak. V'hi ochelet, let's say that the donkey is working and then is eating, meaning you can use the donkey while you're waiting for the owner to claim it to work, and then you feed it, and it's earning its keep, as it were. Ksut menara chat l'shloshim yom. What do you do if it's a garment? So you can't just let it sit there. You have to protect it. So every 30 days, if the guy hasn't gone, every 30 days, you shake it out. You can spread it out, let's say on the ground, if it will help the garment, but not for your own benefit. If let's say that you found his vessels, you're allowed to use them for your own purpose, but not in a destructive way. Let's say you have some wooden vessels. You have to use them so they don't get rotten. In other words, you have an obligation to take care of the lost item while you're holding it in your house. And the obligation does not stretch to you having to lay out expenses. So all we saw with the donkey, for instance, is that only if the donkey is working and earning its keep, do you then keep it and feed it. We have to see what will happen in a different case. Now, the next this is like just really shorthand for a much larger discussion about taking care of the lost item. And now the Braita says something that we will see also in a Mishnah in the second parak, which is an unusual sort of Mishnah. It's not unusual for Midrash Halakha, as you'll see. Hasimla hayta bichlal kol elu. If you take a look at Pasuk Gimel, the one that's all highlighted, you'll see that it lists not only ox and lamb, but also donkey and also garment and then everything. Now, the truth is that once you say donkey and everything, so you're not limiting it to, let's say, kosher animals and everything, that would include everything. And therefore, the assumption is hasimla haitam bichlal kol elu, meaning a garment was already assumed and didn't need to be stated explicitly. Why was it mentioned explicitly? Meaning it's the odd one here because everything else is animals. L'hakishe leha, to use it as a model. Ma simla miyuchedet sheyesh la simanim v'yesh la tovim. What do we know about a garment? You have to remember that their garments, by and large, were individually made. Matter of fact, completely individually made. They had started already in the times of the Mishnah with quote-unquote factories for vessels. So you might have 10 vessels that look alike. But garments are all unique, and they have simanim on them. The yesh la tovarim, and they also have people who are claiming them. All right? Kach kol sheyesh lo simanim v'yesh lo tovim. So therefore, we expand it and say, that becomes the model. What is the model of those things that we need to apply these laws to? Which is, you can't look away. You got to take it in. You got to hold it until the guy seeking it comes, is things that have simanim, and we'll talk about that in a second, and the tovarim. Tovim means claimants, right? So now, let's start with the second one because it's a little easier. How do we define something that has claimants, and shall we say, how do we define something that doesn't have claimants? What do you think? What do you think claimants excludes? So there's...
Do you mean marks or things like that?
No, that's simanim. I'm talking about claim. What is tovim excluding? Meaning, we only apply this to things that have a tovarim, a toveya. What's that excluding? So the answer is a four-letter word that you all know. And that four-letter word is yeush. It's the sort of thing that presumably, for whatever reason, the owner has given up on, then there's no more Hashavat Avidah. And we're going to see towards the end of the shiur, we will see an interesting take on a Gemara in the second parak that's going to be kind of central for our discussion about that. What are simanim, which is the first thing, which is the reigning topic when it comes to Hashavat Avidah? What are simanim?
A question is, if you don't know who the owner is, How do you know he gave up?
Correct. So then we have to judge that based on all sorts of criteria that we're going to get into. Where it was found, what the nature of the item is, things of that sort. Good question. So now, what are simanim?
Identifiable items of some kind.
Right. Some identifiable mark. So clearly, you find a wallet, that's a no-brainer. It's usually got a license in it, a credit card, got a name, kind of address, got everything in it. All right, but you find a pendant, and the pendant is got some sort of a unique shape to it. And on the back, there's two initials on the back, J and R, and there's a heart between them. All right, so it's pretty easy. Now, how would you do it functionally? How would you do it if you assumed that there are two premises here? One is the premise is it's owned by somebody Jewish. We're going to talk about that. It's going to be a critical piece of this discussion. And the second is that they haven't given up on it based on where it was found, how it was found, etc. Now, what are you going to do with it? Because you're obligated to participate in this mitzvah because it fits the criteria of Yeshto Simanim Yeshto Tovim.
You have to look after it.
What?
Number one, you have to look after it.
You have to look after it, but it's going to sit in your house for generations. Nobody's going to know it's there. So you're also going to have to somehow tease out publicity without giving away what it is. And therefore, you would say, you know, on Tuesday afternoon, some jewelry was found on the corner of Robertson and Saturn. Right? And if send me an email, and bring simanim. And then I'll say, oh, I lost my pendant, has this shape, it says J and R and a heart. Yeah, very good. Come on over and get it. All right, simanim. Good. Okay, so we're gonna talk a lot about simanim in the parak. All right, so now again, the Pasuk expands it to anything he's lost. Now, notice that the Asher Tovad Mimenu, the Midrash Halacha here, limits it and says that if the the item is worth less than a Shavah Pruta, then this mitzvah doesn't apply. And we see that from Asher Tovad Mimenu or from Mitzata. Rabbi Yehuda gets it from there. And now, lo tuchal litalem, the last three words, lo tuchal litalem, litain alav belo taseh, that there's a lo taseh involved in looking away from it. Okay. Now, the mitzvah of Hashavat Avidah shows up here in Dvarim. However, the Ramban, it's important Ramban is in general when it comes to Dvarim. Now, Bishlal, when you're talking about Perush HaTorah, the Ramban is vital. The Ramban in his introduction to Sefer Dvarim talks about the mitzvot in Sefer Dvarim. Sefer Dvarim presents something of a conundrum on a number of levels. First of all, because who's the author of Sefer Dvarim? And I'm not going to get into that right now, because that's really for a Parshanut Shir, but the whole issue of authorship, Moshe, right? But the legal code in Dvarim, the Ramban talks about mitzvot mitba'arot and mitzvot mechudashot, meaning that there are some new mitzvot that show up in Dvarim that don't exist earlier in the Torah, and there are some mitzvot which are expansions on earlier mitzvot or particular applications of earlier mitzvot. So, for instance, there's a mitzvah in Sefer Bamidbar, we all know it well, which is the mitzvah of tzitzit. But there's also a one-line mitzvah of tzitzit in Parshat Ki Tetzeh, which expands the certain parameters of what tzitzit are. So they expand it. The Ramban points out that the mitzvah we just read in Dvarim is really a mitzvah mitba'eret, meaning it's a mitzvah that's expansive on two different things that show up in Shmot. Take a look. First of all, Avedah shows up in Shmot in an odd place, meaning it shows up in a place which isn't about Avedah, right? Watch. This is something that we dealt with in the first two shiurim about Shvuah, especially last week. Right? Somebody entrusts somebody else. This is, of course, a Shomer Chinam. And it's stolen from the Shomer. Then the Ganav has to pay Shnaim. So then the Shomer has to come and take an oath. I'll call Devar Pesha. Al shor, al chamor, al se, al salmat. Does that list look familiar? For any neglect regarding an ox, a donkey, a lamb, or a garment. Sounds like the same list. Al kol aveda. Anything that's lost. Asher yomar ki huze, anavil ayim yadavu varshtehem, etc. And then shon shtayim l'reyu. We already saw the midrash halacha that this is referring not to the ganav himself, but to the shomer who claims tanat ganav and then turns out to be lying. He himself has to be shtayim. But notice you again have the same list of shor, chamor, se, and salma as we had more spread out in our piece. Take a look at source 5, which is in Shmot, again, Parshat Mishpatim. And you're going to find another, and this is the thing the Ramban points to as being the original, shall we say, of Hashavat Avedah, and then Dvarim is the expansion of it. But as you saw in Dvarim, we get all the details, so that's why I wanted to start with that. Ki tifka shor o yivcha o chamoro to'eh. You encounter the ox of your enemy, not your brother, your enemy, or his donkey, and they are wandering around. Hashev tishivenulo. You must return it to him. So almost everybody picks up on oyivcha. The Gemara talks about this, that it's there to try to point out that even though it's somebody who's dafka, you don't get along with, and you're having problems with, doing this may patch it up, and you have to be machnia your yetzer to try to return it, etc. Okay, mitzvah hashavat avidah, with far less details, nothing about bringing into the house, and nothing about a lamb, and nothing about a simla, and nothing about him seeking it out, and no isur of lo tuchalit alayim, just an obligation to return it. But look at the next pasuk. Ki tir'eh chamor sona'acha rovetz tachat masa'o, v'chadalta me'azov lo. If you see the donkey of your enemy, just like the previous pasuk, breaking under, kind of crushing under his burden, meaning the donkey is falling because his burden's too heavy, v'chadalta me'azov lo, and you must avoid not helping him. Azov tazovimo, you actually must help him. In other words, you have to help him unload. Now, who are you helping? You're helping not the donkey, you're helping your enemy. When your enemy's trying to unload and take care of the donkey and he's having a hard time, you're supposed to go help him. Right? Now, notice the juxtaposition. Does this look familiar? Here you have the mitzvah of Hashavat Avedah in its earliest presentation in Shmot, immediately followed, but just a parsha stuma, immediately followed by a prohibition of ignoring a fellow Jew who's not your friend, a fellow Jew who's struggling with his animal, in this case, to unload him. You have to help him unload it. In Dvarim, what did you see? A much broader and more detailed presentation of Hashavat Avedah, immediately followed by Parshas Tuma, of a prohibition against seeing the animal of your fellow falling, and they're having difficulty getting him up. You can't turn away. You have to go help him. So the question that I want to ask right now before getting into the Mishnah is it possible that Hashavat Avedah is a subset of a larger group of mitzvot, which are you're supposed to proactively look after your fellow's property? Let's say very simply, you're supposed to proactively look after your fellow's property. Which means that if you're on the street and you see either your fellow struggling with something, you have to help him. Or if you see that your fellow's property has gone off, you have to retrieve it. And that it's all kind of one box. And you could make that argument from the juxtaposition in both Shmot and Dvarim of these mitzvot with Hashavat Avedah. Keep that in mind and let's continue. Now, you see the Mishnah here. We don't have to read it because we saw it in the Sifrei. The Simla is already included in the list. It's assumed in the list. Why identify it specially? Because a Simla has Simanim and Tovim. Therefore, anything that has Simanim and Tovim, and the last two words are the words that are new to us, to our lexicon, we have to get used to them. Chayav lehachriz. You are obligated to make an announcement. In other words, to publicize the find and then help find the guy who owns it. Okay, good. Now, there's one other place that Avedah shows up, and it's near to us, near to our hearts, because we just dealt with it at the end of Bava Kamma. Do you remember that in the last two prakim, especially the last two prakim of Bava Kamma, we dealt quite a bit with the issue of asham gezelot, of what happens when you are accused of some sort of financial wrongdoing, meaning a debt you owe someone and you are denying, and you take an oath to wit you do not owe that debt, and you later recant and admit that you lied. You have to pay the debt, you have to pay an extra fifth, and you have to bring a korban, correct? Right? Remember that. Now, in that parsha, there's something curious that happens. And we kind of ignored it then because we want to save it for now. By the barrel of the night, we'll show them more. Nefesh kitachtau ma'ala ma'al badonai. Chesh ba mito b'fika dono b'tzumit yano b'gazel o ashakata mito. So far, these are all things in which you clearly owe money to somebody. You're denying a pikadon or some other obligation you made towards him, or gezel, you stole from him, or you oppressed him. The tzumit yad here may mean referring to withholding wages. And so that all makes sense. And if somebody comes up to you and accuses you, you took my thing. You owe me a paycheck, whatever it might be, and you deny it. And then there is this red herring. O matza aveda v'chi cheshba v'nishba al shaker. Or you found an aveda and you lied, you denied it, and you took an oath, lying, saying, I don't have this or I don't owe this to you. In any of these cases, and then what do we say? That the first thing you have to do is you have to return the stolen item, return the money that you owe him, return the pikadon, or return the aveda. Now, this parsha, the inclusion of aveda in here, is dramatic. It's odd, because aveda is the odd man out in this list. You see why? Because all of the other things are things that I, as the accused, as the defendant here, I generated an obligation to pay you. I stole from you and I owe you back. You entrusted something to me and I didn't give it back to you. I hired you and I didn't pay you. But how did aveda get into that? You're coming and claiming, oh, I heard you found my ox and you're holding him for yourself. And I denied, I never found your ox. And I take an oath. And then I admit it, I'm in the same camp as if I stole it. And so I'd like to show you that we have the very real possibility that aveda is part of a whole different group of issues, which is prohibitions against financial wrongdoing towards the other, that are all forms of, if you will, theft. If I hire somebody to work, he works for me and I don't pay him, it's a form of theft. If a guy entrusts something to me and then I lie about it and don't give it back to him, it's a form of theft. So how did aveda get roped into this? Do you understand the problem? It doesn't belong on the list. Okay. Now, last thing I want to look at in this context is really something that's not there. It's always fun to find something that's not there because what are you looking for? Take a look at source 7. Source 7 is a very popular list. It is the second half of the opening set of psukim in Parshat Kedoshim. And Parshat Kedoshim, Bismano, we should probably do a thing on Parshat Kedoshim and its structure and its halachic message. But Parshat Kedoshim, the beginning of Parshat Kedoshim, is a rapidly intensifying demand of interpersonal responsibility. I'll say it again. It's a rapidly intensifying demand of interpersonal responsibility. Because as you watch the psukim, the prohibitions then sort of melt into obligations that you have towards each other. Now, after the first few psukim, which are about Morav Va'em and Shabbat and then Pigul, then we get into the hardcore, which goes as follows. Lo Tignovu. I'm going to read the whole thing, so I want to get the flavor of what's going on. Lo Tignovu. And that is clearly the prohibition of theft of items. You understand that halachically, we read Lo Tignovu in the Aseret HaDibrot is kidnapping, right? But Lo Tignovu, V'lo Techachashu, V'lo Teshakru, Ish Pa'amito. not allowed to lie to each other, meaning in business, etc. Veloti shavu vishmila shaker. Can't take an oath against using my name and lie. Because if you do that, you will be mechalel et Hashem. You may not oppress your fellow, which may refer to not paying him, and you may not steal from him. That's withholding payment. Don't curse the deaf. Don't put a stumbling block before the blind. With all of the halachic implication, what that means, and fear God. Lo tasu avel b'mishpat. This seems to be directed towards the judges. Don't enable corruption in a court case. Lo tisaf nedav lo tatav bnei gadol. Do not favor either the poor or the rich. But tzedek tishpot amitacha. Rather, judge your fellow justly. Lo telech rachil b'amecha. Do not go around carrying gossip from in your nation. Lo tamor adam reyacha. We're going to come back to that one. Don't stand idly by while you're on the blood of your fellow. Ani Adonai. And now the crescendo, which is, and you understand why it's an intensifying web of obligations that shifts from prohibition to obligation. Lo tisnat achicha bilvavecha. You may not hate your fellow in your heart. Hocheach tochiach tamitacha. It seems to mean, rather, if he's upset you, you have to tell him. Lo tisa lav chet, but tell him in a way that's not going to cause more sin. Lo tikom velo titor bnei amecha. You may not take vengeance or hold a grudge against fellows of your nation, and then it goes off onto Kilaim and other things. You notice what's missing here? Hashavat Aveda.
Hashavat Aveda.
I don't see it here. I don't see anything relating to it. Now, you could say, well, Hashavat Aveda is really, doesn't belong on this list. Because these are all things where the Torah is telling you, don't behave this way and don't behave this way. And they are not casuistic. They are not saying, if this happens, don't do that. And all of Hashavat Avidah is casuistic. It's as a case. If you do this, don't behave this way, rather do that. But you can also make the argument that Hashavat Avidah is really kind of part of this list. In other words, Hashavat Avidah may fall under one or another of the categories on this list. Because if you read this list carefully, you can see not all the items, but quite a number of the items here become categories. Think about lo tamor adam reyacha. You're not allowed to stand idly by of the blood of your brother, which may mean while he's bleeding, etc. What halachot can you infer from that simple statement? I'll help you out.
You have to save someone's life.
You have to save someone's life. Keep going. What else? Someone's starving, you have to feed them. Keep going. Right. What else? Someone's sick, you have to take them to the hospital. What else?
These are all positive things.
Right. The other so one is what negative. Else? What else would you put under Lo Tamor Adam Reyacha? Somebody's dying, somebody's hurt, you gotta help them.
Someone's missing an object, you have to return it to them.
So maybe Lo Tamal Adam Reyacha, and I'll take you to the Gemara that Rabbi Yochanan said back in Baba Kama, maybe by extension that means when somebody is suffering an essential kind of loss, you can't just stand by, you gotta help them. Maybe. Or maybe when you see your fellow struggling with his animal, maybe you're not allowed to stand by idly, you have to go in and help. On the other hand, notice that I highlighted Lo Tigzol, which, again, you would not think has anything to do with Hashavat Avidah, except for Vayikra, where Hashem Gzelot includes a denial of an Avidah. You understand that Avidah is lost, pun intended, between several different categories. So let's take a look. Parenthetically, and I'm only mentioning it because we're right there, and I don't want to keep sliding up and down. But in several places, and we'll see it later on in the Gemara, the definition of gezeilah is given as grabbing something from someone directly while they intend to hold it, and you grab it from them. And the Ur text for that is, v'ikat ish mitzri, one of his warriors, smote an Egyptian, that sounds familiar, ish mareh, some big frightening looking guy, V'yarei tzvi chanit, He had a spear or a lance in his hand, the Egyptian. Vayered elav bashavet. And the guy grabbed it from him. Vayigzol et tachanit miyad ha-mitzri. He stole, and that's the place where it shows up as in a narrative. He stole the lance from the hand of the Mitzri, and then he killed the Egyptian with his own lance. We use this as the model of what Leila is. We'll see why that's critical for our discussion. Okay. The first place I want to go for understanding what Hashavat Avidah is going to be one of our favorite fallback places, which is Sefer HaMitzvot. Sefer HaMitzvot of the Rambam. But before that, I want to show you something that we haven't had a chance to look at. And it's always delightful to share with you some of our amazing range of literature, including the things that are a little bit more exotic. You know, the Bahag in the 9th century was the first really that we know of to compose a listing of the mitzvot. And it started this whole literature that we call Minyan HaMitzvot that was actively involved all the way till the 15th century with commentary and disputes about what counts as a mitzvah. It was absolutely 100% academic. Didn't impact on halakha l'maase at all. But very early on, Rav Sadia wrote a Sefer HaMitzvot as a poem. It's very cool. And I'm going to show you two lines from the poem. The poem is not only a poem, it's an acrostic. And it's a reversible acrostic where it goes Aleph and Bet and Gimel and the Taf, it turns around, and then Shin and Resh and Kuf, etc., till it gets back to Aleph for Mitzvot Taseh and for Mitzvot Lo Taseh. It's like really impressive. And what's additionally impressive is that at the beginning of the 20th century, there was a great Gaon, I believe in Eastern Europe, I don't know, Rabbi Yochum official parallel, who, according to the story I heard, I can't verify it, sat in an attic with nothing but Rav Sadia's poem, and he wrote a commentary on it, which is unbelievable. Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal was a huge fan of this commentary. Yochum official parallel's commentary on the Sefer Mitzvot. Now, just to let you know, the whole Sefer Mitzvot is like 2 pages because it's a poem. And his comment, the book, that the one I have sitting on my shelf right here, which is his commentary on it, is 3 very thick volumes, thin paper, tiny print. It's really astounding. But anyways, back to this. So you see that in Sefer Mitzvot of the Rasag, he writes, Hakem Takim, by the way, each one of the mitzvot is 2 or 3 words. That's the whole thing. Hakem Takim, which is the mitzvah of helping the fellow load his animal. Azov to Azov, which is helping him unload the animal. V'ha'ev ta'avit de'chisaron, lending somebody money when they need it. Hashev tashiv aveda, returning an aveda. V'anek tanik v'chiach l'chashon. Right? So hanek tanik is giving the gift to the Eved, etc. Notice, where did he place Hashavat Aveda? He didn't do it just for words that rhyme. He did it also conceptually. Where did he place Hashavat Aveda? Along with helping the guy load his animal, helping the guy unload his animal. Some of the things that we saw. Right? Now notice in the Lota says, he says, Prutza Tilboshet Shatnez, not to wear shatnez, Uvalti Talem Mi Aveda, you're not allowed to ignore an Aveda. V'nafel, that's the animal that's falling. Lo tashichu, which is the not charging interest, etc., etc. So it's a little different than the lo tases. But notice in the ases, he seems to put it squarely there. But now let's take a look at the Rambam. Now the Rambam in Sefer Mitzvot ase. Remember the Rambam, as you know, wrote the Sefer Mitzvot as well as an introduction to the Mishnah Torah. He wrote Sefer Mitzvot in Arabic. And Sefer Mitzvot, he wrote an introduction explaining why he wrote it really as a challenge to the Bahag, and the Bahag's counting the mitzvot. And he wrote 14 introductory paragraphs, which we call shorashim, each of which delineated one of his criteria for counting something as a mitzvah. So criterion number one is it has to be d'oraita. Criterion number two is it can't be inferred via one of the hermeneutical rules, etc. And he has 14 different statements of that sort. And each one of them is there really to negate one of the things that, or more, that the Bahag counted. The Bahag counted Nerot Shabbat, Nerot Hanukkah, and all these things the Rambam just tears into pieces for that. So, and then we have the 248 mitzvot taseh, the way the Rambam counts them, and then the lo taseh, and then there's all the commentaries you can see in different versions and editions of Sefer Mitzvot. Okay, Sefer Mitzvot, mitzvah resh bet, 202 out of 248. Sivanu lo rina masame alabema, the command to help somebody unload their animal. By the way, what would happen if you're walking in a parking lot and you saw some older person trying to load up their van with their groceries? Stop me and stop and help. Right? Just tell me. All right. Now, what's the next mitzvah? This is all in order. I didn't leave anything out. I left the whole paragraph out, but I didn't leave any of the titles out. Sivanu lahakima masala bema ol hadam, to help somebody load. And by the way, notice, not just load the animal, but let's say a person's putting on a pack. You have to help him put on his pack if he's having a problem. Then mitzvah reish dalid, it's a big one. He should sivanu lashiv ha'aveda libaleha, the obligation to return an aveda to its owner. And now, because this is our topic, I brought the whole thing. He quotes the pasuk, etc. And then the next mitzvah is lochiach hachote, the obligation to rebuke your fellow who has sinned against you, or a sinner. And the next one is Sivanu lehov ksatenu ksatenu, then avat Yisrael, avat achim. Right? Curious, but take a look where the Rambam placed Hashavat Aveda. Now, I'm the one who created this penta list of five items and put it in the middle. I decided where to start. But notice that what leads up to Hashavat Aveda is prikantina, helping somebody unload and load. And then there's Hashavat Aveda. And then we get into two very huge interpersonal mitzvot. Now, if I'm looking at this, I say, you know what? Hashavat Aveda is really a subset of mitzvot which are about caring for another person. You're caring for another person, ultimately, Ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha. You're caring for another person to make sure that their spiritual well-being is on the right track. So if they behave badly, you, in the proper way, try to correct them. If they have lost an item, you correct them. You bring it back to them. If they're having trouble with their pack, you help them load or unload. It's all part of the same picture. And the Rambam put them together. Okay. Now, in the lo taseh, the Rambam listed that there's a lo taseh of looking away when there's an avedan. I'm going to read it just so we get the definition here. And then we'll see another curious thing. We'll have time to look at the first piece of Gemara that we're going to look at from Daf Chaf Vav. The Lota says, number 269, Hishi ziranu mitalem min aveda, God forbade us from ignoring an aveda. Aval, rather, what must we do? Nikcha v'nach zira lebaleha. We have to take it, return it to its owner. That's where the Torah says, don't, you're not allowed to look away. Ukvar biarnu omram b'mechilta, when you ignore it, you violated an aseh and a lo taseh, which is not returning an item. You violated the aseh of you're supposed to return it, you didn't, and the lo taseh of looking away. This, by the way, is talking about somebody who just walks away. We're not talking about somebody who picks it up and takes it home and keeps it. Right? We're going to get to that. Vishnei Torah kafal ha'azara. The Rambam is referring to Sefer Dvarim, of course, not his own book. Valo lav nifrad v'mro lo tiret shor achicha v'tseo nidachim italam tamehem. Notice, the Rambam brings in the mitzvah, the way it's presented in Dvarim, our first source, and says it's presented as a separate lav, which is to turn away and ignore. Uv'sifri, lo tiret shor achicha mitzvah lo taseh. So we have an asay to return it, a lot asay not to look away, and not to look away is lo tira trachicha toeh, right? Correct. Okay. Now I'm gonna just very quickly, because I want to get to that Gemara. The Rambam, as you know, when he presents a set of halachot, because the Rambam presents the entire code of law, the Mishnei Torah, as being an expansion on all 613 mitzvot. And therefore, at the beginning, at the introduction of every section of halakha, the Rambam introduces it by saying, this section includes 14 mitzvot. 11 mitzvot aseh, 3 mitzvot lo taseh, here's what they are. And then the explanation and expansion of these mitzvot is in these chapters. Boom, we're off to the races. So in the introduction to Hilchot Gzela Ve'aveda, and by the way, that categorization should already tell you volumes, that in the Rambam in Sefer Nizikin, when he set up a group of chapters devoted to our topic, he put Gzela and Aveda together, not Gneva. Gzela and Aveda together. Now remember what I asked earlier in the shir.
Mm-hmm.
Is Aveda part of the general obligation that we have towards our fellow and his well-being and his property? Or is Aveda really, in some sense, a subset of Gzela, as we saw from Hashem Gzelot? The Rambam puts it together in an area called Gzela Vaveda. And look at the mitzvot that he puts at the beginning of the piece. Lo ligzol, lo lashok, lo lachmod, lo itavot, ashiva ta gzela, those are all about gzela. And then, shaloita lemin aveda, lashiva aveda. The Rambam loops them together. And when you get to the 11th parak of Hilchot Gzela Vaveda, he switches from gzela to aveda. Right? Now, Hashev Avedah L'Yisrael Mitzvah Taseh. He says, returning an Avedah, that's a Mitzvah Taseh. We're going to look at this Rambam more next week. But the Rambam in Perek Yud Aleph presents the kind of the basic contours of the Mitzvah. And in Perek Yod Dalet, this goes for at least four Prakim, the Rambam talks about the consequences of a certain case. We're going to look at it right now in the Gemara of what happens when you don't return, but with certain things playing out, how that impacts on you. So let's take a look at that Gemara that I keep promising, which is right here. We go. Okay. V'yama Rava. Here we are. Ra'a sela shenafla. And by the way, we're going to spend the rest of the time pretty much on this Gemara. Mm-hmm. There's a Racha and a Ritva that we'll look at also. Ra'a sela shenafla. You walk in and you see a guy drop a coin. Netala lifnei yeush. Let's say you picked it up before the guy gave up on it. The guy wasn't even aware that it was lost. He thinks it's there. And you picked it up al menat ligozla, meaning your intent was, I'm going to pocket it. So you see a guy walking. He drops a $20 bill. He's not even aware he dropped it. You pick it up and immediately pocket it, intending to keep it. Over bekulan, you violated all of these laws, which are lo tigzol, you're a thief. Interesting. Hashev teshiven, you didn't return it. And lo tuchalit alem, you did look away. You did ignore his avedah. Now, that's an interesting thing. By picking it up and pocketing it, that's called ignoring it. Because you're not ignoring the item, you're ignoring his loss, and you're pocketing it. Okay? Now, let's say that after the guy says, I'm never going to find my 20 again. Then you come up to him and you say, I found your 20. Here it is. Guess what? Matana hu d'yahivle. Now you're just giving him a gift. Bisur d'avad avad. You violated the isur. In other words, you can't fix it. You see why? It's a very cool model. You see a guy drop something. You pick it up. And you pocket it. You're intending to keep it. The guy subsequently gives up on it. And then you feel bad and you come up to him and say, I found this thing. It's yours. You give it to him. You did not escape liability for the obligation. Whatever liability you got, it's still there. You didn't fulfill the mitzvah of lo tuchal litalem. You violated that. You violated lo tigzol. And you violated hashev teshivein. Returning it, you didn't do anything. You're a nice guy. You returned it, and you probably did the ethical thing. But within a halachic construct, you're still in hot water. Now watch this. Let's make you a better guy. The guy drops it, and he hasn't given up. He doesn't know about it yet. And you pick it up intending to return it to him. But, he's still walking further down. You got an appointment. I'll catch up with him. And then you heard he gave up on it. You said, you know what? I'm going to keep it. After you heard he gave up on it, you said, you know, I'm going to keep it. Over mishum hashev tishivim. You only violated one thing, which is you didn't return it to him. Why is that? Why did you not violate lo tigzol?
This is the sequencing.
Because, okay, go ahead, explain.
Because you only heard that he gave up after the fact.
Right. But there's another piece, which is when he dropped it, when you picked it up, what was your intention in the second case?
Return it.
You're going to return it, right?
Yeah.
So you, right now you're in great shape. You then heard, before you had a chance to return it, you heard he gave up on it. So you didn't violate lo tigzol, did you? But now you're keeping it. Kind of weird. But why isn't it lo tigzol? If you keep it.
There was never a point where you had an intention to keep it and he hadn't given up on it.
Exactly. So what happens when he has yeush? It's now an avedah. Get this. Now we're going back to the beginning. She'ein lo tovim. Remember the simla? The simla has simanim and tovim. This has no tovim because he's given up on it. He's not looking for it. And so therefore, I'm keeping it. I only missed one thing, which is I didn't return it to him. I could do that. Now, himtin la achin yashua ba'alim unatala. Let's say he dropped it. I knew where it was, and I didn't pick it up at all. And I waited until I knew he gave up. And then I picked it up. The only thing I violated was lo tuchal italeim, which is you're not allowed to look away. Now, how does that work? So let's play it out. I'm walking down the street. I see a guy drop something. We have now three possible scenarios, meaning one scenario, three possible responses. I see a guy drop a $20 bill. Possibility one. What's the first case?
Pick it up, planning to keep it.
Pick it up, intending to keep it. Right? And even if after he has yeush, I decided to be a good guy and return it, I still violated all three things. Lo tigzol. I didn't do hashev tishivim because I'm not returning his item to him. And I ignored, at the time, I ignored the avedah. Now, let's say I picked it up from the ground to return it to him. By the time I was able to catch up with him, I heard he gave up, but then I decided I'm going to keep it. What did I violate? I didn't violate lo tuchal litaleim because I picked it up to return it to him.
Right.
I didn't violate lo tigzol.
Right.
What did I violate? I didn't return it to him. Hashem tishimei. Now, let's say I let it sit on the ground until I found out there was yeush. And then I picked it up. There's no lo tigzol, it's hefker. Right? There's no hashev tishivim, it's not his.
Mm-hmm.
But there was lo tuchal litaleim because I waited to pick it up. Right? So now, look at this. The the rach, sorry, Naftali?
No, I'll wait to the end, because I think it's something you said in one of the introductory shiurs. You're within the letter of the law, but you're over Basisa Yashua V'ato.
Oh, yeah, of course. This guy's not getting shlishi. I agree. Right. All right. So now, take a look at the Rach. The Rach, Rabbeinu Chananel, we all know who he is, right? Rabbeinu Chananel ben Chushiel, right? His father, Rabbeinu Chushiel, was one of the famous four guys in the boat, famous Sefer Kabbalah story. Ended up in Kirwan from Italy. And Rabbeinu Chananel became a giant in Kirwan. Rabbeinu Chananel had a very famous student. You know his name? Yitzchak of Fez, the Rif.
Awesome.
Okay, yeah. So now the Rach, in his commentary here, says the following, and watch his language. This is really cool. Amar Rava. Now, I'm keeping them both on the screen. You can look up at the Gemara itself. It means our text of the Gemara. Selash naflam mechaveron, tala lifnei yeush, over mishum bal tigzol, umishum hashev tishivim, umishum lo tuchal italem. Alpha gav dahadra lamar levatar yeush, isura kfar avda, vashta matana hudi yahivle. Right? So now, what's different in Rabbeinu Chananel? What's missing? And I highlighted it. Rabbeinu Chananel presents Rava's words as, meaning maybe out of a girsa, which is, if you saw the $20 bill fall from the guy and you picked it up before Yeush, you violated Bal Tigzol, etc. What do you leave out that's in our Gemara? You see the highlighted words on top?
I'm not like.
Yeah, he doesn't have that in there, which means I saw it fall. I picked it up, and we don't care about what your intention is. We violated Baltik Zol, Hashem Teshivim, etc. And even though if after Yehush, you return it to him, right, which means the rock kind of leaves you in an awkward position. It means the minute you pick it up, you have to run and give it to him. There's no waiting time. But I want to just end off with this passage from the Ritva. Rabbi Shum Baltik Zol. This is the interesting thing about when you picked it up and you were intending to keep it. This before Yehush, then you violated Baal Lotik Zol. Perush techol d'shmishat netila nitkaven legozla, arehu gezel. Meaning, if at the time you pick it up, you intend to keep it, that's gezel. Afa bishalog zala miyad chaviro, even though you didn't take it from his hand. That's the fascinating thing. If you pick it up off the ground, the guy doesn't even know it's on the ground, he thinks it's in his pocket, you pick it up, you're a gezelim, even though you didn't take it from him. And gezela, we almost always say, until now we always say, is a stick-up guy, right? The kevan de bershut mare kaima korem yehush, means it's still in the domain of the original owner, until yehush. Kemishin otla michatzero dami, it says if you reached in and took it out of his backyard. Vekarinim ve'igzol tachanit mi'adam yitzri, and that pasuk that we mentioned about David and his warriors applies here. It doesn't have to be out of the guy's hand, be out of his backyard. Somebody sneaks in your garage and takes your lawnmower. That's gzela, even though you didn't see it. Lafuke idach bavra lekaman lacharshin alanit kaven legozla to lekem shum bal tigzol, as opposed to Rava's second case, which is if you picked it up intending to return it and then after Yehush decided to keep it, there's no lo tigzol. Why? Tashte lo avedumia dvigzol tachanit miyana mitzri. It's no longer like that pasuk. I told you that pasuk about David's warriors guides our definition of gzela forever. And because he gave up on it, it's not in his hands anymore. And when you decide to keep it, v'chein pirush Rashi zal umiu kol shu biyado pikadon kafar bo bebeitin shalach bo yad nasel av gazlan beitin shlichut yad he gozel miyado dami. So he then puts a little knetch in it, which is that if you deny debt and deny liability when you're in beitin, let's say as a shomer, then even though the item is not in your hands or his hands or anything else, I mean, it is in your hands, but back in your property, that is considered like a gzela, but first of all, because he never had Yehush on it, etc. Okay, and then there's a fascinating machlok between the Balamor and the Ramban, as you can see here, quite long, about a lot of these issues, which really come down to what I've been presenting the whole shiur, which is what is the definition of Hashavat Aveda? So I want to summarize that, and as you can see, there's more yet to talk about, but the question that I posed at the beginning of the shiur is, what is Hashavat Aveda? Is Hashavat Aveda an extension of sorts of the general obligation we have to look after our fellows' well-being? Or is Hashavat Aveda an extension, in a sense, of Lo Tigzol? Or is Hashavat Aveda sui generis, sits by itself? So I'm going to argue from omission that it's not a sui generis. And I know it's an odd argument, but remember when we saw in Parshat Kedoshim that whole list of very broad topics about interpersonal relationships, and Avedah is not there? That makes me think that Avedah is a subset of a greater category. What's the category? Is it the category of keeping an eye out for your friend's welfare, which culminates in don't stand idly by your neighbor, your friend's blood, but also includes helping him with his property, helping him with his animals, etc.? Or is it, on the other hand, an extension of Lo Tigzol, which we've just seen now, which is it's possible for you to pick up an Avedah and be a Gazlan because you saw who dropped it, he doesn't have Yehush, and you pocketed it, you're a Gazlan. Right? Which is it? We're going to talk about it more. I'm going to leave it as an open question. And is it possible that Avedah operates in both channels? And we'll see how that works. So
just to clarify, Rabbi, what's the significance then of putting it in one category versus another?
It might have an implication for the breadth of obligation. the very fact that the obligation, because lo tigzol, gzela is an instrument of anybody. You're not allowed to steal from anybody. And yet Hashavat Avidah is limited to Achicha, to other Jews, right? Which is why you then have to wonder, well, if it's an extension of gzela in some sense, then why is it limited to Achicha? And then we have to draw some lines. If, on the other hand, it's an expansion of the general obligation to look after the welfare, both in life and in property of your fellow. And now I'll mention that passage from Rabbi Yochanan that I alluded to, but didn't mention. Remember, Rabbi Yochanan in the end of Bava Kamma says that when you steal from somebody, you're taking their life, right? And nefshohu gozel. Right, needs to explain why, and that's why we understand that, like, the severe consequences to gzela. But in that way, you could say that there's a prohibition of mistreating, should we say, of appropriating somebody else's property, which has all sorts of creases in it, dina de bar mitzra and hasagat gvul and all sorts of things like that, which then become formalized in gzela, and then become, if you will, kind of build up all the way to ratzach, if you want to be kind of really homiletic about it, but not so homiletic. On the other hand, there may be an affirmative obligation to keep an eye out for your fellow's well-being, which is then limited to your fellow, to fellow Jews. And then that is going to then expand also to not only if you give me something to watch, I have responsibility for it, but if HaKadosh Baruch Hu plops it in my lap, I've got a responsibility for it, and that is to return it to you. You see what I'm saying? Now, the discussion is academic more than practical. It's not going to impact on how we practice Hashavat Avidah, but it may have a big impact on how we view Hashavat Avidah and where Hashavat Avidah should sort of fit within the contours of our halachic world. Again, the Rambam did two different things. In Sefer Mitzvot, he put Hashavat Avidah right in the middle of all these things of helping somebody else, culminating with V'ahavta L'Rechah Kamocha. And on the other hand, in the Halachot, he put Hashavat Avidah in the context of Gzela, Lo Tigzol, right? Gzela V'Avidah. Interesting. How is the Rambam reading it? Or question is, does it cross boundaries? So we will explore this further.
Different points in his life.
It could be. It also could be different points in the process of Hashavat Avidah. You're correct, but sometimes it could be the Rambam changes mind. Could be. Right. Yeah.